All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Friday, November 4th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. And at the end of this podcast, just stick around because we bring on Bruce Elliott, the co-founder of No Halftime, one of our great sponsors. And he's at the end of the podcast. We do about 15 minutes about No Halftime, the app. So stick around for that at the end. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Here to help you win or continue winning or just get better at FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. We have a free 3-day trial to our projection system with optimal lineups powered by Lineup Lab. And that's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. All right, we are going to break down the NFL game by game this week and take a look at sort of some of the fantasy implications of each game. If you want our value plays articles, value plays for cash games, just kind of go back to the last podcast where we break down kind of position by position who we see rising to the top. Today, we're just going to look at each game and, you know, kind of touch on some of the guys we mentioned before. And then possibly throw in some other guys and, you know, why we are either on or off certain players for the week, game by game. You ready, buddy? You feeling good?
Oh, yeah. I'm feeling hot.
Yeah,
you're hot. I'm ready to something else that rhymes with that.
Oh, wow. I was wondering where you were going to go. I couldn't even fill in the extra hot words. There aren't that many, I guess.
Yeah, that was the big problem.
All right, let's get going with the games. The first game is Minnesota and Detroit. Minnesota's coming off a loss last week. They're a -6 favorites against the Lions coming in. Line really hasn't moved too much around. It looks like Jerick McKinnon is going to be back this week and back into, I guess, the RB1 role, maybe more of a committee thing still with Asiata. What if anything stands out to you about the Minnesota game or the Lions side of the ball? You know, Minnesota's a pretty good defense.
Yeah, I mean, the Minnesota defense, I guess, stands out as one that people will probably play on some level this week. But in terms of skill position players, there really isn't a lot to love here. I mean, we talked about Ebron as a potential both cash game and big tournament play yesterday. I still believe that's the case. We talked about how Stafford has really been, you know, throwing a lot more short routes now that Calvin Johnson's not there. And the Marvin Jones thing wasn't really living up to their expectations, I think. On the other side of the ball, I do think Stephon Diggs has, you know, wide receiver 2-ish upside, and you can still get him for quite an affordable price at $6,500 on FanDuel. So, you know, he had 23% of their target share last week, you know, playing a full set of snaps, got the red zone look, got the touchdown. So, yeah, I think he's a reasonable play.
Yeah, all these guys, mostly on the Minnesota side, fall into the pretty good, not overwhelmingly excited. Like, I don't mind Kyle Rudolph. He falls into that group of just – we talked about this yesterday too, but this group of tight ends where you're kind of just looking at them all and you're like, well, all those guys are the same, you know? And he kind of falls into that group. I mean, he might be a little higher in that group with the target share for him, but you know, he I don't mind him. Diggs is a guy that's coming into our optimal lineups right now, mostly on the price and the increased opportunity he saw last week, although there was some wide receiver just kind of depth chart issues that they were having last week. So I'm not sure that could have probably played into the bump that he saw. And McKinnon, I think McKinnon and Asiata probably just wipe each other out in terms of...
No, I don't think you can play either of those guys.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because McKinnon actually probably, it seems like he could be good. And I was joking, I was on another podcast yesterday, name dropping, but it was talking about how like our system just kind of has never seen a Viking it didn't want to play. Like if just with like a little bit of opportunity, McKinnon's one of those guys where if you thought he was going to get more carries, I suspect we'd be looking at him a little bit more, but you just can't really trust the workload at this point. So all these guys kind of...
Yeah, McKinnon's never been great on a yards per carry basis really either. Like, you know, we talk about often how interchangeable running backs seem to be. It doesn't totally seem to be that way in Minnesota. Like, I think Adrian Peterson really is a transcendent talent. And I mean, I'm not breaking any new ground there, but I think that, you know, the common understanding in daily fantasy is that you can stick a running back in and pretty much expect that they'll do most of what the previous guy did. It just doesn't work that way in Minnesota, so I'll pass.
All right, moving on to the next game, we have the Cowboys headed into Cleveland to face the Browns. The Cowboys are the second biggest favorite on the week at -7. They have one of the higher, I think, second or third highest implied total on the week. We talked about Ezekiel Elliott a lot on the last podcast. We're pretty firmly in the cash game camp on him, and I suspect he's sort of the chalk when it all is said and done, just because of the matchup against the Browns. What else can we look at from this game? Dallas side, I think there's a couple interesting guys, and then Cleveland has McCown back, but that defense is great. Give me some thoughts on this game.
Sure. I'll reinforce the Ezekiel Elliott point. Worth noting that Cleveland, second highest total yards allowed this season, thanks to being both terrible, generally speaking, and terrible on a yards per carry basis. where they rank third worst at 4.8 yards per carry. Since Dallas's plan is basically to run the ball to Elliott and then hope the game ends eventually, I think that he'll see a lot of usage here. Kind of took a small step back last week to only 26 touches, but I suspect that'll, again, somehow increase going into this week. As far as the other guys here, actually, I'm kind of interested in Terrell Pryor on a big tournament basis. He's listed as questionable, but he'll play. Came back out, had 20% of the target share last week, which he had had 2 weeks prior against Tennessee as well. He's definitely their red zone target and just a big upside guy. I mean, he's a guy, you can't say this about too many $7,000 wide receivers, but he does have legit wide receiver one upside. So he's kind of the guy I'm highest on, for big tournaments here.
Yeah, two out of his last 3 weeks have been excellent. And then really kind of just, he's had three, I would call, excellent weeks in the last seven. Sure. And that's with, just kind of bums as quarterback. I mean, McCown actually does help him. McCown is a better quarterback than the other guys they were running out there before. And that really probably should consider that with a guy like him, because McCown can actually complete passes. Like, not totally clear the Kevin Hogan's of the world could do that. So, yeah, no, I like that. Pryor is a guy that I hadn't really thought about too much, and looking sort of just down at some of his stuff, that's good.
That's why you come to me for the expert analysis, my man.
I can't. Well, I don't really have anyone else to call at this time of the day. This is the problem. If I had like a Rolodex of guys to call, or women to call, to talk about football at 10 o'clock, I mean, we would probably not do this as regularly, but again...
Sure. Most of the women you call to talk about football, they're not available until at least 5 Eastern, right? Or, have to wake up early. I mean, I'm trying to think of them all off the top of my head. Most of them do work full-time, so...
Right, they have other full-time jobs to get through. So, unfortunately, we're stuck. We're married for better or for worse, buddy. The one way I could see going in this game, for tournaments especially, is to stack Dak and Dez on the idea that Elliott is going to probably be a chalk play, and if you think that they get, on the off chance that, Dez has seen targets, Dak has been willing to throw to him, they do game script a little bit with Dez early to get him involved. I mean, it's easy to get him involved, he's great, but where I think the Cowboys definitely understand the idea that Dez needs to kind of be bought into the game early, or else the guy, he just starts kind of going off the rails, and the Cowboys mm-hmm. will throw to him on early series. If you think that he can take away some of that scoring, if some of the scoring comes from those two, you get separation on the idea that Elliott will probably also be the much higher owned of those plays. So I think mm-hmm. that makes an interesting sort of tournament stack for me. Because Dak is a guy, I don't think, people don't typically want to play him. Mostly the price ends up falling in a weird spot and they run the ball so much. So I get it. I wouldn't do it in cash. I wouldn't do either in cash games. But for tournaments, sure. I think you get separation going both ways on that stack.
Dak is a nice quarterback for big tournaments too, just because, he's got 4 rushing touchdowns this year, right? Yep. Like that's a ton for a quarterback. And even if he doesn't put up huge rushing yardage totals, getting that random 6 points here or there is a really, really big boost. Yeah, I'm with that.
Two out of the last 5 weeks, he's rushed for more than 35 yards and a touchdown, and he has rushing touchdowns in 4 of the last 6 weeks. So again, those, you can run hot in that respect, but certain quarterbacks like Tom Brady's never going to run hot with rushing touchdowns, right? Because he just doesn't run. So no, yeah, I think definitely for a tournament, I'll be throwing some stacks with those two guys in for sure.
Stacks with Dax and Dez coming at you.
Trademark that, buddy. That was we're gonna trademark that saying for sure. The next game is the Steelers and the Ravens. This game is interesting for me because it looks like Roethlisberger is going to be back playing, and yet I can't remember if we talked about this yesterday, but the line hasn't moved at all, and so this is one of those things where I'm like, I would just love to call Vegas and be like, hey guys. Oh, actually, you know what? I take that back. I'm looking now. It has moved. So it opened at 2.5. I don't need to call Vegas, so cancel the call to Vegas. I'm not going to need to call them. I'm going to tell my secretary, cancel that call to Vegas. I was telling my secretary. They opened at 2.5 favorites and are now minus 1.5. Yeah, yeah. So that's the clear quarterback change line movement. You don't really see that at all unless you have a quarterback. So Roethlisberger is coming back. We talked about Brown yesterday. Does that move the needle for you on Le'Veon Bell as well? I think Brown we can consider to probably be the safest wide receiver again. We talked yesterday how the price has dropped significantly, even though he's still, I think he's still third in the league in targets per game, and that was with 2 weeks of Landry Jones. So I think Bell, we agree, is a cash game play for sure with Roethlisberger. But what about Bell? What does it do? What does Roethlisberger there do for him in this game?
Yeah, I think it boosts Bell for sure. I think he'll just probably be more effective with the guy who can get him the ball most effectively. And also, perhaps on a more underrated level, it opens up the running game a little bit more. Like we saw against the Patriots were just stacking the line, and their game plan was very explicitly to take Bell away. And he still, I mean, in that game, I don't know if you saw that one, but he was still getting like an extra 2 to 3 yards on every carry. He's just so good. But yeah, it'll open things up tremendously for him. And while the Ravens aren't like a tip-top matchup in terms of teams you want to stack up for running games, which is to say they're a real bad matchup, I think he's still playable.
But he's not, like, you would agree that it's still Elliott over Bell, like even with
that. I think so. I mean, again, the matchup is just so much worse. Like Baltimore allowing 3.5 yards per attempt this season, the third fewest yards total overall, and Cleveland's the second highest and the third worst. So it's pretty clear in Elliott's favor from my perspective, although it feels weird to say that.
Yeah, the Ravens are actually number one in DVOA against the rush this year, and kind of by a lot over the second highest team. So in terms of percentages. So not a great matchup for Bell at all, though that does probably help helps the Brown case a little bit more if they're going to need to throw. Another note about this game, Marcus Wheaton is not in the starting lineup anymore. It's Darius Heyward-Bey enters the starting lineup over him in terms of the depth chart. Not sure. I mean, that probably it makes Bey interesting from like a tournament perspective, I would say. He has some upside. We've seen him catch some downfield balls, but not a guy that you can really rely on. So many of those targets go to Bell and Brown in the offense. On the other side, on the Ravens side, you know, they started as favorites. Is there anything here for you? Terrence West? I don't know. I mean, like the Flacco, anything that you can even grab onto at all from the Ravens side?
No, I think you're grasping. I mean, Dennis Pitta is sort of in that the tight end who's like everybody else group. So right. Maybe you get some separation by playing him. But nah, I'm not really on the Ravens this week.
One guy I could see kind of being maybe interesting, especially if they're playing from behind, is Mike Wallace. He's been getting some – he's been – had more of a target share with Steve Smith off the field. So he's just pretty – like he's pretty erratic, and you can't really trust him on just a per-game basis, I don't think. He also doesn't convert a ton of his targets to catches just historically. So, but just from a – if you think they're playing from behind, if they need to go to the air a little bit more, Wallace does have some big play upside. Though probably more of a tournament play for me than anything else.
Yeah, that's a fine observation. I think he's still cheap enough to where if he does have as good a game as he's capable of, then you're kind of getting away with something. But you know, to that point, averaging better than 10 targets a week over the last 4 weeks. But yeah, like he really is. We talk about these guys all the time, but a T.Y. Hilton, Mike Evans style, except kind of a worse version of those guys because he's not a tremendous red zone target. So
right.
Yeah, I'm not enamored by Wallace, but. Could see him having a big game.
Yeah, it's mostly just when you get guys in those double-digit opportunities, they're worth taking note for just for the upside. But again, not really necessarily a safe dude. All right, next game is actually one of the more interesting ones in the slate, too. It's well, because of one team, not the other. It's Jacksonville heads into Kansas City. Kansas City is the biggest favorite on this week, though they see their implied total come down just a little bit since open. They open at -7.5. Jacksonville is obviously just a total mess on the offensive side of the ball. Not terrible on defense this year. The news that we're waiting for the most is Spencer Ware. As of Thursday afternoon, he had not cleared concussion protocol, though he could clear it today. And I think you need to clear by Friday to be able to play. I'm not positive about the rules there, but if he were to sit, I think we would definitely see Charcandrick West as the chalk play of the week correctly, even though against a decent Jacksonville team. What else on this side? I mean, anything? Nick Foles is going to start for Alex Smith, so I don't know if that moves the needle for you for the Chiefs at all. And I mean, anyone else that we can even consider? Obviously, no. With the idea that Ware West news is the really important piece.
Yeah, I have an important tweet to read about Charcandrick West that I saw, which is this is from the @FantasyDouche. He says, Charcandrick West versus Bishop Sankey sounds like a February high school basketball matchup for the City League title. I just think that's amazing.
That is pretty good.
That's so good. The internet acknowledged it. That's 700 retweets on that.
No, that's pretty good.
Yeah, real solid. In terms of actual analysis for this game, I think Charcandrick West will be just a really, really big stock cash game play if we get the definitive news that Ware is out. He hasn't been super really at all on any level from a yards per carry to an opportunity basis. But, you know, it's in the kind of the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king territory. If there's just no one else who can take the ball and run it down the field, he's just going to find himself with a lot of opportunity for a team that would prefer to run the ball in a game where they're favored. So, yeah, he'll be and I think he's even on the level for me where I probably wouldn't even get away from him in big tournaments just because the value would be so tremendous.
Yeah, no, I'm completely with you there. I don't think the upside for him would be just too great. It's funny with these guys. You know, we say that running backs are interchangeable for sure, but They are and they aren't. Like, there's a reason Tre'Kendrick West has been buried on the depth chart for a long time, and just kind of the reason they've had a running back carousel is just because they don't really trust him at all. But again, if he's the only guy left, then you have to do it. You know, you can't. It's hard to trust a receiving core with Foles. But I mean, Foles has been an NFL quarterback before, so it's not like he's just coming in totally new into the situation. And he did play a little bit last week and wasn't terrible. So, but I just don't know. I mean, Kelce, I guess maybe at the tight end, though he's a little bit more expensive than that group that we discussed before. Macklin gets some red zone looks, but not really enough that you can trust it.
No, you can't do it with a new quarterback.
Yeah, and then I guess you can consider the Chiefs' defense against Jacksonville. With Blake Bortles and poor Allen Robinson having to still be on this team. Honestly, it's one of those things like, can we just get the guy like a new team maybe or just like send him somewhere else with another quarterback? It's really a shame to have his talent level be buried into garbage time throws from Blake Bortles. But I don't know on the Jacksonville side, what can he even do? I guess we talked about Blake Bortles as maybe a tournament upside guy because of the garbage time thing.
I think both Bortles and Robinson are tournament upside guys. Robinson still got 15 targets last week. I mean, that's a lot of targets and he hasn't really done anything with them in the last, the whole season. So right. you haven't really been happy if you've rostered Robinson or drafted him for your season-long league, but the upside is still there, and I think there will be a week where the Bortles-Robinson combination at least puts you in contention for a big tournament.
By the way, I wanted to quick side note about season-long leagues. So when we only did one. We did like an experts league through the podcasting network that we do, the Blog Talk Radio.
How's it going, by the way? We're in first place still?
No, that has not gone well. But no one's going to care about that.
Excuses. We drafted Adrian Peterson. That's why.
About the bad beats. So, but anyway, I got, but in preparation for that, I had done a bunch of season-long drafts. It's going to be a bunch of mock drafts, like through ESPN, just to kind of like get my feet wet with drafting. And I got a trade proposal sent to me yesterday from one of those mock draft leagues. So I'm like, someone is still grinding away this mock, like this random 10 dudes that no one even knew going in and like still evaluating trades on the thing. I just thought that was amazing. Like, I was like, I just kind of want to like reach out to the guy and just like kind of introduce myself.
See if he'll write NFL for us. Yeah.
Shake his hand. if you're just like, he's like, I got to win this public league. I can't gotta keep the record unblemished.
13 points out of first place. I don't think I can catch his first guy.
And I got to tell you, and it was funny too. This is the last thing about this, but the trade was actually reasonable. I thought I'd see something like, you know, my Russell Wilson for his like third string running back, but it was actually something that didn't strike, something that he had considered as to be a reasonable, not just kind of a.
Yeah, he doesn't want a lowball.
Yeah, it wasn't an affront. It wasn't an affront to my humanity.
He wants to keep the trade lines open for the future in case something else comes up.
So. Yeah, great. The next game is the Jets and the Dolphins. We talked about J.J. yesterday with the crazy volume for him. The only problem for him going in, and he would be much higher in our system, and I think he's still a cash game consideration, especially if you don't get that West news because the price hasn't climbed enough, is the Jets are really, really good on defense when it comes to the run, third overall in DVOA. That's actually probably one of the major reasons he's just not higher on the value list for us, considering how much opportunity we've given him in the system. We've given him opportunity on the level of guys like Bell and Elliott because it just seems real at this point. Does the defense do enough? Does the Jets defense do enough to move you off of Jai? I'm mostly saying if like West, because if West isn't a consideration, we're going to need another cash game running back. And I'm just wondering if he fits the bill there.
I think he does. You know, the Jets are a very, very tough rush defense, but Dolphins still favored here. And, you know, with how much success they've had in the past few games, it's hard to believe that they'll just abandon that altogether, even if it's not going perfectly well. But what we'd see, I think, from Ajayi would be something like, you know, not 24 carries for 200 yards, but maybe 24 carries for like 94 yards and a touchdown or something, you know, and I think that's still reasonable enough production to where you're happy with the price. I mean, clearly you wouldn't want to be playing a guy in like the $8,000 range, but in terms of a guy whose role seems pretty secure in a matchup where his team is favored and the game script shouldn't get out of hand, it seems like a reasonable play.
And at this time in the season, that role secure piece is really kind of the most important piece that we can have. And it's like, if people do underrate that, and I know it's a bad defense, but a lot of that is mitigated by just knowing a guy's role. And I guess we don't know it for sure, but you have to believe after these last two games that he's just the guy, at least for another game, right? Like, sure. And there's so many teams where this is just not clear. Like, there's just, way more than half the teams are just totally unclear. Either have a bad running back to start or no running back, or you're just like not 100% certain what the plan is. Like, on the other side of the ball, like the Jets are like this, right? Like, you're like, okay, I want to trust that Forte is going to get the carries. But we've just seen games where he just doesn't, you know, and they've gone to him a little bit more here in the short term with the opportunity picking up. But I mean, there's still Bilal Powell there. and they just have gotten away from him. And it's just like one of those situations you just can't totally 100% trust. So, you know, Forte, 30 carries and 25 carries over the last two games, 9 and 12 and 14 the 3 weeks before, right? And their situation hasn't changed so much that they're going to – that they're maybe totally incentivized to totally lean on him. So that's just like the difference I see with those two guys is just the implied safety behind the opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think, you know, you can make that argument for and against a lot of running backs going on right now. And I think the other piece is not only the job security, but the price. Like, if for job security, we're seeing you have to pay pretty much $8,000 to get a good running back with job security, and paying dramatically less than that, you know, starts to move the needle into the, not matchup proof is the wrong word, but essentially, right? I mean, matchup, as long as the game script doesn't dramatically not favor him, I think you can play a Jai at these prices and feel pretty decent about him. So,
all right, the Giants take on Philadelphia, heads into New York this week to take on the Giants. Giants slight favorites this week. Not exactly sure why. Both these teams are pretty unexciting, I think, from a fantasy level. But yeah. The Giants' run game is a disaster with Jennings. He's carried, I think last game was like 13 carries for like 20 yards. He stinks. On the Giants' side of the ball, anything against this Philly defense and either going the other way, these two teams just seem like a bunch of just random parts kind of thrown together to go out there and throw into a football game.
This looks like a full pass to me. I mean, one thing from this game was that the Giants were showing up in some lineups for us as a defense, just because they're so cheap. But you know, they're really unexciting defense too. They don't create turnovers. They're not especially good at stopping teams from scoring points. So that's just, you know, acknowledging the fact that this game has a low total. So yay! I don't know. Is there anything I'm missing here?
Well, the one way I could see going here, and this is only for tournaments, is because if you think Brown is going to be the highest owned wide receiver this week, which I suspect he will be, like on FanDuel he's only 8,700, which is kind of a joke of a price considering he's getting the quarterback back, and he's like 89 on DraftKings. I think these are like $1,100 to $1,200 less than he was maybe even 3 weeks ago with now the same presumed opportunity. One thing I could see doing is actually pivoting to a guy like Beckham. And only because you're going to get separation. Like, this week is weird. Like, I think that most of the, at least skill position plays, seem pretty crystallized at the top end of the pay scale. I think you can make cases in that mid-tier for a lot of different players. But, you know, guys like Brown and Elliott just strike me as the guys that most people will see as the safe plays. You know, we already have Julio Jones off the plate. You know, in terms of salary, after Brown, you get a guys with just huge question marks or bad matchups. Like you get Beckham against Philly. You get Jordy Nelson's too unclear about his opportunity with the wide receivers coming back. Then you get Amari Cooper against Denver. Terrible matchup. Hilton against Green Bay. We know the problems there with matchups. So you get this just group of wide receivers with these just kind of everyone's going to notice their bad matchups, right? And so the way I could see pivoting is to just an extreme talent like Beckham just having the upside in a tournament that you get separation because everyone else looks at these bad matchups and wants to stay away. So that's my long-winded.
Yeah, I mean, I would be reluctant to ever say that anyone is not playable in a big tournament, and Beckham is certainly playable. I guess for me, like dealing with the hip and the abdomen stuff, like still saying he's only 85%, limited in practice, good defense, it doesn't strike me as the first place I would look, but I could see it being you never know category. He certainly has the talent to do it.
Yeah, but the rest of the game is pretty much just kind of whatever. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, Sproles ran the ball a little bit for the Eagles. They're fine just kind of going with the hot hand in certain cases and just seeing what works. Sure. And they're just a pretty slow offense in general. This game could just be a grinded out, you know, just kind of who really true Giants fans and true Eagles fans are interested. I'm not sure if anyone else is.
Which is to say we should stop talking about him probably.
I was going to segue, buddy. Don't worry about the segue.
I thought you were going to do three more minutes.
Don't worry about the seg. Saints head to San Francisco, fly across the country to San Fran. They, interesting line movement here. Starts at 20. They start at 51 over-under, bumped up to 53, almost all on the Saints side of the ball. And so they start at 27 implied. They're up, pushing up against 29 now. Where do you think that line movement comes from? Was it just sort of misevaluated to start? Did they expect more out of Breeze? You know, Breeze is a classic, plays much better at home, which is obvious. It's a dome with controlled conditions. He's been much better at home for his career, though this seems like a good matchup for him. What do you think maybe moved that line at all? And, you know, is there any – who are all the guys that we're looking at here, I guess?
Yeah, the Saints are a really tough ball of wax, I think, this week because, first of all, San Francisco has been like epically bad against the run this season. They've allowed 185 yards per game on the ground. The next highest is 143. So that's like just so bad, about as bad as it possibly gets. Of course, the running back situation in New Orleans is a mess right now, too, because Ingram, like Peyton pulled Ingram, just it seemed like complete tilt, just like one fumble, you're out for the rest of the game.
Yep.
Just really weird, especially because I think it was only Ingram's second fumble on the season so far. And then Hightower came in and was very serviceable and got just tons of work. So I think that we just don't know what's going to happen there. You could probably, if you can catch lightning in a bottle on one of those running backs, maybe you get there, but I suspect it'll be more of a committee thing. And then you flip over to the passing side of the ball, but San Francisco's actually been pretty effective against the pass this season. Their overall defensive rating is driven way down by their bad rush defense, so they're actually just sixth in terms of overall passing yards per game allowed this year. So I don't know that it's a great matchup for Breeze, but given the high total and you know, that the fact that it keeps ticking upward and the Saints' general preference to pass the ball, I think he is still a reasonable cash game play for sure.
Yeah, he's the cash game play for me behind Rod, like distant second to Rodgers. So
yeah, right.
I would play Rodgers at the sort of the same-ish price point over Breeze. But if you're playing, you know, kind of alternate slates, I do think that Breeze is probably the safer guy there.
Yeah, on the 4 o'clock stage.
Michael Thomas, we talked about yesterday, is still a cash game play. The price hasn't moved too much. He's clearly the possession guy over there. So I think we like him. And you could probably talk yourself into the Brandon Cookses of the world. I think like what's funny about labeling the wide receivers and some of these things in terms of DVOA, mm-hmm. San Francisco, I'm pretty sure, is like the absolute worst in the league. Yeah, they're 32nd in the league versus wide receiver ones this year. But that's one of those things, like it's sometimes to me a labeling issue because like who is the wide receiver one for? I think that most people would consider it to be Cooks, although, you know, production might not necessarily bear that out. So
in terms of routes too, like Snead will run those kind of wide receiver one routes as well. And neither of those guys is the guy who's like, you have to double team Randy Moss or else you're just dead. Like that's not what's going on there.
So. Right. So on the other side too, you know, it's funny about Kaepernick. He, in a lot of ways, this is a total dream matchup for a guy like Kaepernick. The Saints are mm-hmm. awful on defense, right? And have just one of the reasons their offense is so prolific is simply because they have to just continue to score to make up for the defense because the defense can't stop anybody. And so you would think that, you know, dream matchup for Kaepernick. The problem is Kaepernick is so bad, right? He is the last 2 weeks he has completed less than 50% of his passes, so bad, obviously. But he's taken off in the run a ton. I think he has like something like
140 total yards. Yeah.
Right. So this is a situation where like I could see him mm-hmm. having. He can have upside. Like the two matchups against Buffalo and the Bucks aren't great matchups for him. This is not the case for, you know, it stands to reason he's going to be much better against a Saints defense than he was against Buffalo or Tampa Bay. And so I could definitely see playing him in a tournament if they're playing catch up, if he needs to. And a catch up game for a guy like Kaepernick is great because he is able to, I mean, he's not accurate at all. But if plays break down, he is a guy that will just get out and run a lot. And that does have extreme upside for a guy like him. So I could see he's a little too expensive for me to consider any kind of safe. But he's a guy that I will probably end up rostering a couple times in tournaments just because I do think there's, especially on DraftKings at 5,600, some upside there. And also, Carlos Hyde might be back this week, but it would be hard to trust him because they've been totally running back by committee. Though he was getting the ball when he was playing, he's dealing with a shoulder injury. If he were to get back into the lineup and we knew he was just going to be the every down guy again, I could see maybe taking a stab at him, but that's kind of an unknown situation. Moving into the Panthers and the Rams, the Panthers are -3 favorites going on the road to LA. You know, Cam got out and rushed a little bit more. You know, we've been worried at the beginning of the year. We love Cam on the running upside. Then he gets the concussion, and he kind of stops running altogether. So we're worried about it. And then last week he goes back out and runs again for 7 carries for 43 yards. Though the completion percentage was garbage against tough Arizona defense. Where does Cam kind of fall for you now on like sort of that fantasy quarterback pantheon of players? Like, is he significantly below Rodgers at this point? Like, are they not even in the same class? Like, where do you kind of put him?
Yeah, he strikes me as a high upside, low floor guy. I mean, he can get out there and just have a terrible passing game, turn in a performance like he did against Arizona, or he can get out in the run and score a touchdown and, you know, give you 14 points on the ground before you even start consider his passing. For me, the passing has just been too erratic for me to really want to invest, you know, big top tier quarterback dollars on him. But you don't really have to invest top-tier quarterback dollars. So I think he's a reasonable guy to jam in there for a big tournament. I kind of like him as a standalone. Like, you haven't really been able to rely on Benjamin or Olsen. And if you're going to take him you know, for just to try and win a big GPP, I think you're doing that, hoping he gets like two rushing touchdowns or something. So if you're going to put him in a big tournament, I would say not bothering with the stack, but sure, he's a guy you can consider.
Over the last 2 weeks, Jonathan Stewart has carried 19 times and 25 times and scored four rushing touchdowns. You know, one of the reasons we have been worried about him in the past was exactly this, the touchdown upside on him, mostly because Cam did do so much goal line work for them, and because it was just easier just to have the big body get over the goal line without having to hand the ball off. If they're getting away from that a little bit, down and close, does that move the needle for you on Stewart? Like, if more of the game plan now is to avoid the Cam concussion, because like he got hurt exactly on this, was running it in, like a bootleg on the two-point conversion, and that's where he got his concussion. Do you think that the Panthers have sort of made a commitment to just rely a little bit more on Stewart down and close, and does that kind of boost the touchdown expectation for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a nice observation. It's not something I had really thought about too much, but the Cam injury piece, frankly. But yeah, I think that's solid analysis. I don't know what else to say there. Because, yeah, in the past, I mean, you can worry about this both ways with those guys where they could vulture one another's touchdowns.
Yep.
And so, therefore, you know, unless you play both, but they don't really, you know, the quantity is not really there to support both, generally speaking. But, yeah, Stewart's still very cheap. LA has been a decent run defense this season, nothing to write home about, but yeah, I think that's fine.
Yeah, Cam did have a rushing touchdown 2 games ago, so like it can happen for both, though that was in a shootout with the Saints, so probably a little bit.
Yeah, those are generally, I think to your point, are not really designed runs anymore. They're kind of when the play breaks down runs, so it makes them a little bit less reliable.
The next game is probably the most interesting from a DFS standpoint, and that's Green Bay and the Colts. Green Bay, we're still sort of waiting on news on the receivers, and we talked about this in the podcast yesterday, but this is kind of outside of the Charkandrick West, Spencer Ware news for me is the most important piece of information that we're going to need going into Sunday. I'm not totally confident with this game being on the later slate that we're going to have all of the information that we need going in, because like last week, the Packers waited a long time before releasing that Ty Montgomery was out. Like it was well after lock, and it really kind of people were pretty pissed about that. He was dealing with sickle cell trait sickness, and it was well after 1 o'clock that they announced that he was going to be out. The game doesn't start till 4:30. Do you think that we know, or do you think we have a clear enough view of the Packers like personnel going into this game that we're going to be able to trust it for cash games? Like Cobb hasn't practiced again, or has been limited in practice. There's very, very few notes about, you know, kind of the injuries piece. This is Friday at 11 o'clock. How confident are you that we're going to know the opportunity going into Sunday?
I think we'll have a pretty clear picture. I mean, they're saying with Montgomery that he'll probably play. I think that that's probably pretty accurate. I don't think it's going to affect Rodgers very much either way. I think it arguably helps Rodgers to have fewer weapons somehow because they're just going to lean on him and just give him the ball over and over again. Vegas sees actually the Packers are tied for the biggest favorite of the week at -7.5. So I do like just the Packers in general. Vegas sees them to be a solid play, and I think I do too. But yeah, the wide receiver question I think is a pretty good one, mostly because they're all in the position where they could become plays if somebody sits. But if you just wind up not knowing anything going into lineup block, I think you probably do your best to find value elsewhere. I don't think any of them are such a great play. Like sometimes you'll see a guy who's just such a great play that you kind of have to play him. And then if he gets scratched, hopefully, you know, 75% of the field will deal with the scratch as well. I don't see any of those guys in that category. So that leaves them as just kind of boom or bust candidates for me.
The only guy that has not seen the production shift at all, no matter what the situation, has been Davante Adams. He's been a heavily targeted guy the last 2 weeks with almost completely different wide receiver personnel. So I guess in terms of safety, he'd be the one guy. They just have so many receivers on that team. And if they're all healthy, it's just, they all kind of seem great in their own ways. I think, I can't remember if I mentioned this on the podcast yesterday, but I could definitely see a situation where we play Rodgers is going to be in optimal lineups no matter what. He's going to be the chalk too. So no reason to get away from him at all. But you can play different cash game lineups, you know, Montgomery here, Cobb there, Adams here, you know, kind of mixing and matching those plays because one of those guys, even Jordy Nelson, though he's a little bit more expensive than that group, and he's actually the guy that has been burned a little bit on the targets when everyone's healthy. So I'm not sure he falls into the same exact category. But in the way that they've been game scripting, one or even two of those guys is going to have double-digit targets almost without a doubt. And so just I think there's just a high floor on mixing and matching and maybe running out a couple different cash game lineups for on the Packers side of the ball. Colts, T.Y. Hilton is doing T.Y. Hilton injury things where you're just not totally sure. He was a guy who left the game early with a hamstring issue and then came back and was pretty non-effective for the Colts last week. You know, Colts are projected to be coming from behind this entire game. Is there any upside on a guy like Luck in that situation if you figure that he's going to need to throw just to kind of even try to keep it close here?
Yeah, I think Luck and Hilton are an interesting guy, team or duo to pair together. There's going to be a lot of fatigue on Hilton. He still has elite wide receiver one upside, very affordable at $7,600 for what he could do. He is back to practicing in full right now, so that indicates to me at least that they're going to try to trot him out there for his full set of reps. And if you play him in cash games, you're probably just asking to tear your own hair out. So, you know, just put that in a $2 lineup that you just hope shoots the moon, but don't try to rely on it, I would say.
The next game is the Titans and the Chargers. Chargers are dealing with a ton of wide receiver core issues in terms of injury right now, yet are still favorites, 25 points, -4.5 against the Titans. Titans have a guy, DeMarco Murray, on their side of the ball that's been a heavy usage guy, though they, you know, are underdogs going into this week. Breakdown for me, you know, where we're looking at with maybe on the Chargers side of things to start, considering they're their favorites against Tennessee.
Sure. I think Gates is the guy that comes to mind immediately. Tight end is really shallow right now. Gates has been solid. He's been upping his snaps while maintaining around that 20% target share number. He's clearly their first option in the red zone. So, you know, going from 18 to 31 to 38 to 55 snaps in the last game shows me that he's probably worth something like 10% more than he's priced at right now, which just makes him a great value and probably a guy we'll trot out there.
If the wide receivers, Benjamin and Williams were both, I think they both sat out of practice yesterday. If one or even both of those guys were to sit, I could see Dontrell Inman actually maybe even becoming a cash game play, because that would be kind of, again, like last man standing situation where, and he's a guy that has definitely seen targets at times. Sometimes the Chargers are a little bit tough to get a handle on because Rivers is a good quarterback, and good quarterbacks will go where the matchup is. And so, and that's been the case with the Chargers this year. But if those other guys were to sit and open up opportunity for Inman, he's kind of a guy, like he has had games in the past that would give me, I would feel pretty safe with him. You know, he's seen four catches last week, three the week before, and then, you know, he had to go back a couple weeks, but he did have a 7 for 120 game. So he's been a guy that's been in the offense, but is definitely behind the other two receivers. So I could see going there if the other guys were injured.
If you can get both out, I think that's probably right. I mean, he does have, like, he's just not as good as them. He has trouble getting separation, but he's so cheap that you can really start to do really good work if he's the only guy left.
On the Tennessee side, can we trust a guy like Murray? I know, again, elite opportunity guy, although it got bit into by Derrick Henry a little bit last game. Is he significantly behind the other running back one kind of dudes just because of the matchup here?
Probably. I mean, he's a little bit cheaper than the other guys, so you like that piece. The opportunity is certainly there. You know, 20 carries in all of his last five starts, touchdown in 5 of his last 6, and including 2 against Houston. So, you know, he's the goal line back. He's the clear running back one. The safety is there. I mean, he's comparable to Elliott, frankly. I think, you know, if the matchups were reversed, we would play Murray over Elliott. And I could certainly understand why someone would look at their game logs and just say, well, why don't I just take Murray and save the 1,100 and invest it somewhere else? The issue is that, yeah, San Diego, 3 yards per carry allowed this season, puts them in the top 10 best running defenses and by that metric. And it's just in a game where the Titans are underdogs, the game script could go against Murray. I don't see any reason to stick your neck out on him.
One guy that's really kind of had a change over the last 4 weeks, I would say, is Mariota. Mariota's completion percentage has been beyond excellent over the last 4 weeks. He's 69%, 71%, 60%, and then 82% last week against Jacksonville. Now, with it has come a nice floor of points, though not a ton of upside, mostly because he just doesn't throw enough, right? Like
they're giving him the easier throws, you know?
Right. It's crazy because he's thrown 10 touchdowns over the last 4 weeks, which is, I mean, that's a number that actually surprised me when I looked at it. I was like, whoa, that's a ton of throwing touchdowns. And that's on very limited pass attempts, right? He's only thrown, of those games, he's thrown over 30 only one time and over 25 only half the time. So yeah, 22 attempts and 24 attempts in two of those games. That is just nothing for a quarterback right now. It stands to reason that increases this week if they're playing from behind. You know, they got out against Jacksonville, so that kind of did him a little dirty there. But is he like a tournament play for you on game script plus the running aspect for him?
Arguably. I actually think the case that you just made maybe is more a case for Murray as a big tournament guy than Mariota, just because like all those touchdowns, like that's really outsized touchdown performance on limited opportunity there. And I think if their plan is to run the ball, that we're going to see Murray actually scoop some more of those red zone opportunities, just in terms of general percentages and how it ought to work out. Yeah, to your point, I mean, winning three of their last four games means that they probably touched on something that's kind of working for them. So, I mean, Mariota's cheap enough to where he could go off and give you a big performance, but he won't be in, like, my must jam in rotation for tournaments or anything.
The most encouraging thing for me is just seeing either the scheme changing to get him more accurate throws, or just him coming into his own in the offense. That was the thing we were sort of worried about with him, was just the consistency through the pass game. But again, if he were to see 35 pass attempts here, because they were playing from behind and because they were able to get San Diego out of, you know, just kind of quickly out of sets to get some more time on the clock, then I do like the upside for him, but it is a little hard to trust just because of the volume.
Sure. I mean, he's essentially the exact same guy he was over the course of last season. Like, this year, 63.3%. Last year, 62.2%. Yards per attempt, identical, 7.6. Yards per game, only separated by half a yard per game. So if you liked Mariota last season, it's more of the same this season. And we kind of liked Mariota last season, so
right.
I think you've got a case there.
The Sunday night game is the Broncos and the Raiders. The Raiders are slight favorites here in Oakland, probably mostly because it's hard to trust the Denver offense at this point. I would suspect that's what's driving that line a little bit. Where does this game fall for you in terms of, I mean, bad match? I wouldn't say a great matchup for Carr on the Raiders side of the ball. And then going the other way, it's like, it's just so hard to know what's going on with the Denver offense right now because they have trouble getting the ball down the field.
Sure. I mean, I think we're still waiting to hear what's going to eventually happen with Devontae Booker. I think if Booker is the clear running back one again, then he's a consideration here. People were kind of off him after last week. You know, he was 5,600 and didn't ultimately pay off. And the increase in price up to 7,000 is going to dissuade people, but I think he's still a consideration. I mean, Oakland still has a lot of these high upside guys like Amari Cooper, obviously Derek Carr with about as high upside of performance as you can get from quarterbacks with 500 yards and four touchdowns last week. So yeah, there's definitely guys who are in play here. Unfortunately, on the Oakland side of the ball, it's just a really terrible matchup. And on the Denver side of the ball, they're just not a very good offense. So, you know, both that limits both sides.
Yeah, Booker still had a ton of touches last week. They gave him the ball 24 times, and that was after sitting out a series or two when he got knocked early in the game. So it looks like he's been practicing. So he is probably in that running back, like not one, but probably like 1A category, just in terms of like how much he gets the ball. But just again, not very good running back, and the Simeon doesn't open up a lot for the running game because the passing game just really hasn't been there either. So that's kind of what holds a guy like him back, I think.
He was real bad last week on a yards per carry basis, and you know the 14.9 fantasy points were ultimately serviceable, but you were really hoping for more. If you knew you were going to get that kind of opportunity, especially on that low price point, he went from being a guy who could have been great to just being sort of average for you. Oakland is a much worse running defense. I mean, Oakland, they're just bad on defense in general, and the 4.8 yards per attempt allowed is tied with Cleveland. So you could definitely do some value work with Booker this week and certainly one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it's interesting too because and for our system on FanDuel at least, he is the fourth highest points per dollar running back after West, Elliott, Ajayi, and then it's Booker. It's where I like that kind of thing is that a lot of people are going to look at Booker last week. He was a huge play. I mean, every single person, he's like 80% start. Every single person mm-hmm. played him last week, basically. And if they were disappointed by the performance and then see the price climb on him, that's exactly a lot of reason that you can just mentally get away from a guy. But again, fourth overall in points per dollar, that's still a good spot according to our system. And I think that we'll get a little separation on people just having that recency thing stick in their head and say, oh God, he's more expensive. He's more expensive now and he didn't pay off the price last week, so I'm going to get away from him. I think you probably can get a nice ownership on him just from that narrative running through people's heads still. The final game on the slate is the Monday night game, which is the Bills and the Seahawks. The NFL really knows how to schedule these games.
Legit can't wait.
They're just like, you know what? Just kind of throw anybody out there. And there's no possible way early in the season that anyone in the NFL could look each other in the eye and say this is going to be like a high leverage game like in late in the season, and mostly because of the Bills. I mean, I just don't know what they're doing with scheduling these games.
Well, the theory that I heard, which is actually sort of compelling, is that they're flying too close to the sun and saying, well, people will just watch football no matter what, so we don't have to put our games on primetime, our good games on primetime, because they're going to show up and just watch them. And that's why we've gotten like so many bad Thursday games as well. So I don't know, you know, just probably a conspiracy theory, but maybe what's going on, give them some benefit of the doubt that it's intentional and not just laziness.
Yeah, I kind of think it's laziness. I'm just like there's the whole season. Now again, you can run a little bit bad with scheduling because like NFL is a little tough to predict who the good teams are going to be.
The Cardinals or the Panthers or whoever would be bad, right?
Right, and it might just speak to like most NFL games haven't been that great this year. Like it just like it kind of wouldn't have mattered. Like which game, like for instance, like which game would we flex into Monday night from this week? Like I'm not sure any of these games are like so compelling that we would put them on. Like maybe Giants Eagles, not really. Like you know what I mean? Like if you run down the list, Steelers Ravens,
Denver Oakland.
Denver, I guess.
Flex it from Sunday.
Yeah. So I guess like more the point is like NFL has just not been a great product this year. And it's a byproduct of not having that many great teams. Teams like the injury piece just screws teams up so bad where, you know, just one key injury.
I just know I'm going to get a call from Roger Goodell now.
Oh my God. That would mean we arrived. I would love if you got a call. Like, oh my God, I would pin. Oh, you can't do it. You can't pin a call up on your,
sure
on your
you can. You print out the transcript. Moving on. So this game, Seattle Buffalo, are there any fantasy implications here that you actually want to talk about?
Not really. I mean, Wilson's just been kind of a weird product this year. Michael has not had enough carries to really get excited about. The Bills are a total mess on offense. Everyone's hurt and they didn't have anyone to begin with really, except for McCoy. And so I just don't know what you're, this is not a slate. I'm like, the only one thing I'm not minding on this one is that sometimes on Monday night, I'm like, ooh, I wish that was on the main slate so I could get so-and-so into the main slate
kind
of thing. Yeah. Not really worried about it from that point of view. Like there's no one that I'm hemming and hawing. And there's also no one that I'm going to run to play this Sunday into Monday slate, just because I think that there's an extreme value on a guy. This game just sort of falls into the whatever category. Move on. Great job, NFL.
Yeah, I'm with you for sure. Nothing I'm interested in here whatsoever.
All right. That is it for you and I talking, breaking down every game on the NFL slate. Stick around in a second. I'm going to hop on with Bruce Elliott from No Halftime.
Bruce.
And
we'll say every time we hear his name.
We'll talk about his app, buddy. I'll talk to you on the NBA podcast in a couple minutes.
Sounds good, man.
All right, I am here with Bruce Elliott, co-founder of No Halftime, one of our great sponsors for the podcast. Bruce, how's it going?
Going well, going well. Thanks for the invite to the show.
Yeah, this is great. Great to have you on. Great to talk a little bit about No Halftime and how No Halftime separates itself. For those that don't know, No Halftime is an app that you can download on your iOS, Android, or on your iPhone, and it's a DFS app. But I'm going to let Bruce explain a little bit about how he sees No Halftime being a little different and where the idea for No Halftime came from.
Sure, yeah. So No Halftime, it is a fantasy app that focuses on one-on-one matchups. For example, you could create a fantasy challenge or matchup that you think Cam Newton is going to have more fantasy points than Drew Brees. So you create that challenge, and then someone essentially takes the other side, as in they believe Drew Brees will have more fantasy points than Cam Newton. So it's head-to-head and one-on-one. So you create one challenge, and then someone accepts it, and that is a fantasy matchup. You know, it's all about not having to worry about a team or having to worry about salary caps and those other things. We just really wanted to make a simple version or simpler version of fantasy sports.
Is that sort of what spawned the idea, was that, you know, the world of salary cap DFS is difficult, right? And the salary cap is probably the very specific thing that makes it difficult, because it's just a math problem about, you know, just basically a, you know, rather simple but kind of complex math problem that some people are able to sort of grasp the idea of and others aren't. What kicked off the idea? Was it that the salary cap that you guys just saw, the salary cap style of DFS just being too difficult over the long term?
You know, that's probably one of many reasons why we decided to start No Halftime. And I can tell you that, you know, the guys and I, we've been doing fantasy sports for maybe 20 some odd years, back when it was paper and pencil. You know, with the leagues, and you know, recently, you know, right around 2013, 2014, we found that we were always challenging each other's lineups. Like, I think my quarterback is going to do better than your quarterback, or my running back is going to do better than your running back. And we said, you know what, we think that there are other people who would want to kind of challenge other folks, you know, with just one-on-one matchups. And we, you know, we kind of looked at the landscape, we looked at fantasy sports, and we said, we think that this is unique enough that people will love it. And yeah, it really simplifies, you know, fantasy sports. So, and also, you know, we looked at, you know, the way, you know, traditional fantasy sports, the way those go, you know, with basketball and baseball. And it was just too much to maintain a lineup for baseball and basketball, you know, having to do those things every day. So we thought that no halftime was perfect for all of the major sports.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's one of those things where, you know, like we always say, you tell users this all the time, is that, you know, DFS is difficult. And people will ask, you know, how does so-and-so have a big bankroll, and how does so-and-so be able to do this? I'm saying, well, because these guys are really smart, right? These guys are really smart, and they're active in the space. And this is essentially, when you boil it down, is basically a math problem. And if you can take out a lot of those other factors like salary cap and things like that, and, you know, lineup lock is kind of an issue. And in the DFS space, no halftime, you're not really too concerned with things like that, because there's always just contests being floated out there kind of ongoing. And you're not going to concerned with just kind of sitting around till 7 p.m. on a basketball slate or you know, on a Sunday NFL slate, worried about getting it in there. I think that I love no halftime for that too, because it's kind of just around, you can accept the challenge, and then you can kind of move on with your life. And that's not, you don't get that with a lot of other DFS outfits.
Yeah, you know, we find that we thought that, you know, the concept was perfect, because you could get into fantasy whenever you wanted. You know, you could open up the app, and there are going to be tons of challenges that you can accept. Or, you know, if you see a matchup that you like, then you could create a matchup, and either a friend or anyone in the world can essentially, anyone in the U.S. could take that challenge.
What is some feedback that you've gotten from users this year? You know, let's specifically talk about, you know, football or basketball, baseball in the short term. What's some user feedback that you've gotten for No Halftime on how that they're interacting with the app?
Oh, I would say in general, users love the app. I mean, what's interesting is, we launched last October, and obviously the first sport that we had was NFL. And a lot of those users, after the season kind of died down for the NFL, you know, they kind of went on pause for a little bit, but they loved the app so much that when the season started up again, that, you know, those same users who might have gone dormant for about 6 months were right back in the app, you know, taking challenges, creating challenges. And that to me kind of speaks to the level of, you know, how much people really like the app. I would say in general, you know, some of the feedback that we've seen, you know, folks wanted us to improve how quick we result challenges. You know, we've done that. Mm-hmm. We've improved the engine that does the automatic verification. We've also added, just a bunch of new features to the app. And also, we have a bunch of new things in the pipeline that we're going to, you know, add to the app to make it more social. Like, for example, we're going to add a global leaderboard so users can see, you know, who are the top players or top users in No Halftime, and maybe even send them a challenge directly. So, you know, we're getting great feedback from all of our users, and not only for NFL, but for all the sports and things that they want to see. So so far, so good. We're going to, you know, keep innovating.
And, you know, just for everyone out there, No Halftime supports, I mean, really just about every sport you could think of. Obviously, the big ones, you know, the big four, clearly, but then also stuff like MLS and PGA, EPL, and you're not going to get that from a lot of other outfits as well, being able to just really just be able to use it across so many multi-sports. When you see, you know, I love the feature, I love the cards, the interaction with No Halftime is great in terms of just being able to very quickly visually, it's a very visual app if you haven't checked it out yet. It's where you're able to just really see really clearly the challenges being thrown out there. Do you find that people, users, are more inclined to create their own challenges or to accept them? Or is it like just a straight up 50-50 split? Like, do you see, like, how do you see more people reacting or interacting with the app?
You know, I think I can honestly say it's probably more of a 50-50 split. It's probably more of a 60-40. I think you have users who will go in there and they'll create challenges. But there's so many great challenges being created that people, you know, find themselves accepting challenges. I look at the app all the time because I want to make sure that things are going right. And I look at the challenges, and you know, there's some good challenges in there. I would say it's probably, you know, 60-40 in terms of accepting versus creating. So definitely it's pretty equal.
Yeah, I'm an acceptor more than a creator. I think it would be my would be my profile. I like going in there and just quickly. Well, some things will help me do a sanity check for our own projection system, because I'll go in there and say, you know, they have this guy, you know, they have Marvin Jones versus Quincy Enunwa, and I'll say, oh, okay, wait a second, our projection system has Jones higher. And I interact with it using just our base projection system, because I'm like, okay, well, we have numbers on all these guys. I can just easily, quickly accept, or, oh, this one's a little too close, and I don't see like an edge there. How do you, what do you do? What's the mechanism for a user or people that, you know, sometimes you'll see this, it's like the person that maybe, I don't want to call it angle shooting, but it's, you know, oh, Cam Newton versus the other team's third string running back, you know, something that's just wildly out of bounds, right? Now, do you see those contests getting accepted? Do you see that users kind of learn the hard way or quickly about like those things aren't accepted? What about contests? Because, you know, these contests are all user created. Is there mechanisms in place for kind of contest creations like that?
So one of the things that we're going to do, I would say over the next month or so, we're actually putting in some updates that we are going to help highlight the better challenges. So for example, you know, someone creates a lopsided challenge, right? Cam Newton versus some third string running back or some third string quarterback. Those challenges will go towards the bottom of the stack. So when I say the stack, when you open up the app and you see the stack of challenges and you're swiping left and right, that's kind of what I'm referring to. So we really want to put those lopsided challenges more towards the bottom. So you see the better ones at the top. So the ones that are kind of, you know, more even, a little bit closer, you know, we really want to showcase those at the top. So we're working on improving the stack engine is what I refer to it as. So that, you know, we can help users see the better challenges. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's really up to the user to kind of, you know, look at the challenge and assess, is this a stupid challenge? You know what?
Right.
I don't think I'm going to take this one. Okay, well, here's a better challenge. It's a little bit closer. So, you know, that's the beauty of the app. You know, it's really kind of user-driven. You know, all the content that's in there, it's user based. And you know, it's really up to the user to kind of say, hey, do I want to take this risk or don't?
So, yeah, I love that. I love that. That's one of the things that we just keep saying it over and over again, but I love the way you can interact with it, that it's just all user based and you can sort of just like free market decide if you want to be part of this challenge or not. And also, as an avid baseball collector, I do find that the way you interact with it is a lot like I used to interact back in the old days with baseball cards, just kind of flipping through them and kind of when you said stack, I didn't realize that was probably one of the things that drew me to the app personally, was that it was almost like flipping through the old time baseball cards. Exactly. Let me give you a couple. I'll throw out a couple no halftime challenges to you this week and see where you land. And maybe I'll post these as soon as we're off. I'll post them up, see if anyone wants to accept any of these as I decide which side I want to end up on. But for NFL, we'll talk a little bit NFL Sunday since this is the NFL pod. This week we have, you know, we have a couple big time running backs. If you were had to look at if you saw a challenge, Ezekiel Elliott or Le'Veon Bell out there, which side do you think you'd want to be on?
Challenge? That's a good one. I would have to go Ezekiel Elliott. The guy he's having a great year. That offensive line is solid. It's hard to go against Ezekiel. They're going to run the ball. They're going to protect Dak. So I got to go Ezekiel. That's a good one.
I think I'm on the same side as you. I like throwing out challenges where it's two big name guys, but our system, I keep saying our system because that's just the thing I'm going to end up referring to for the rest of my life in terms of just projection systems. But Elliott's a guy that we have about 15 to 20% higher than Bell. But for name recognition wise, those are guys that sort of fall in the same plane. I mean, skill wise too. So I think I'm with you on Elliott. All right, I'll give you one more. We'll do a quarterback one where, okay, you know, talk about the aforementioned Cam Newton. This week, if you saw or threw up a challenge, Cam Newton or Drew Brees? Which side of the car do you think you take?
All right. So I would say if I'm going off the numbers, I would probably go with Drew Brees. But, you know, honestly, I would probably lean towards Cam. And I say Cam because, look, Cam is, I think he's going to be playing angry out there. And that team, they're not playing well on defense. So I think Cam is going to feel like he's going to need to shoulder more of the load, maybe do some more running. And I would actually go with Cam on that one.
Yeah, that one's close for us. And I think I'm with you. We don't have like a chip on your shoulder multiplier for numbers for us, but I do think after the way Newton left the last game, he was in the press conference, he was mad. It seemed like he was angry just in the league in general about how he's being treated. You don't want to get guys like that kind of too mad. He's just simply too talented. So while we have Brees slightly higher in the system, like I said, there is sort of a football service sometimes has a narrative street piece to it that it's hard to account for. All right, Bruce, thanks so much for jumping on with us. Bruce, again, is the co-founder of No Halftime, a great app, a great sponsor for the podcast. We love what we're seeing over there. Go over to the app now. You can sign up and use the DFSR25, and that will give you a free $25 bonus. Bruce, thanks so much for coming on with us, and I really appreciate all the work we've done with No Halftime this year.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for inviting me on. And yeah, let's keep it going.